Hello and welcome to another episode of Adventures in .NET. I'm Sean Claybo, your host, and with me today, your co-host, Caleb Wells.
Hey, y'all.
Hey, y'all.
How's it going?
You having a good week?
Pretty good.
Good.
Yeah. You know, we didn't have really bad weather this week, like the last 2 weeks, so that's been good.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
Good.
And it's been low 80s, you know, which is pretty comfortable in for spring in New Orleans. So.
Wow. Yeah, we haven't been that warm yet, but I actually had to mow my lawn for this first time this year yesterday. Mm. It's like, dang it. Those downsides of things warming up and whatever. But it's like, I think I'm the first one on my street to have to mow the yard because I fertilize it for winter and do like that and get it ready. So I'm paying the price.
Yep.
All right. Let's welcome back to the show, Carl Litton. Hey, Carl.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for coming back.
Yeah. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. So
it's been a little while.
Yeah. About a year.
Yep.
Yeah. So what's changed in a year for you?
I don't know. A year more of Azure.
That's always good.
Yeah. That's a big thing. Yeah. That's really what I've been focusing on the last year. So.
Okay. So what part of Azure are you kind of focusing on?
Yeah. So I think like the last time I was on the show, I did authentication and I actually ended up working a lot in Azure AD and stuff like that for the majority of last year after that. So that was kind of topical that worked out that way. Yeah, getting into Azure storage and app services and things like that and functions that we'll be talking about today. So,
yeah. Hey, folks, this is Charles Maxwood from Top End Devs. And lately, I've been working on actually building out top-end devs. If you're interested, you can go to topenddevs.com/podcast, and you can actually hear a little bit more about my story, about why I'm doing what I'm doing with top-end devs, why I changed it from devchat.tv to top-end devs. But what I really want to get into is that I have decided that I'm going to build the platform that I always wished I had with devchat.tv. And I renamed it to Top End Devs because I want to give you the resources that are going to help you to build the career that you want, right? So whether you want to be an influencer in tech, whether you want to go and just max out your salary and then go live a lifestyle with your family, your friends, or just traveling the world or whatever, I want to give you the resources that are going to help you do that. We're going to have career and leadership resources in there, and we're going to be giving you content on a regular basis to help you level up and max out your career. So go check it out at topenddevs.com. If you sign up before my birthday, that's December 14th. If you sign up before my birthday, you can get 50% off the lifetime of your subscription. Once again, that's topenddevs.com.
So if you want to talk about functions, kind of give us the introduction to what functions are and what they do and why you need them.
Yeah, so Azure Functions are basically a compute service from offered by Azure that sits on top of app service, and you can use them for, you know, a number of things, from going in complete serverless kind of architecture with calling different functions to do different things, or even integration services, chaining functions together, that kind of stuff. What I've been using them for lately is kind of in a hybrid environment where we have virtual machines, but also you want to like offload some, you know, compute resources to something else outside of the virtual machine app server. And so you can call a function here or there to do specific tasks.
Cool. What's your favorite thing about functions?
Ooh, I think the fact that they are a managed service and that you don't have to worry about the server side or IIS configurations. It's code first. So, you know, you don't have, you could do it all through C# if you want to, or PowerShell or whatever. There's not infrastructure to manage. And also the development experience, I think, is really clean in that, you know, when I first started working with them, I was kind of surprised that you can create a function app project in Visual Studio in the same solution as everything else. And it can sit right alongside other applications and class libraries, and you can add dependencies to it just like any other application. So that was, I was pretty happy with that, and that it's a seamless development and debugging experience.
So why would I want to use functions instead of just, you know, writing a small little app and having some endpoints and things like that? What's the advantage there?
Yeah, I mean, I think scalability could be one, depending on your needs. They can scale more dynamically. And there's also a lot of built-in triggers and bindings and stuff like that. So, you know, if you work with like event hubs or Azure storage, you can configure input and output bindings for those and different triggers for those to interact with the data kind of automatically. You know, you push something into blob storage and it kicks off an Azure function to do something with that data. Similarly, there's also like time triggers. So if you want somebody to run on a specific interval or something like that, you know, instead of having like a Windows service that, you know, would pull for data or a Windows scheduled task that would run, you could have a trigger that spins up when you need it, does its thing, and then, you know, goes to sleep after that until the next scheduled time comes up.
So do the internals of a function look similar to like a web API 2 endpoint?
They can. So you can have an HTTP trigger and you basically call it like a regular web API endpoint, and you can inject dependencies into it, and you know, you can get to like the request contents and the body of the request and all that stuff through it, and you can really use it as like an HTTP endpoint. If you didn't want to run that on a traditional app service or app server, like an IIS or something, you could run it as a function.
Do functions have state? You know, are they pure?
Yeah, they can. So that was one of the things that I didn't realize when I started using them, because you know, I usually thought of functions as like, how you need something done, you make a call to it, it can run some processing for you and then, you know, store that off or something. But there's the durable functions and like the workflow aspect of it, I didn't really realize was a thing until I started looking into them. And that's that there's like, you can chain functions together, you can pass state between them. You know, there's different patterns that you can do to orchestrate different workflows and things like that. I'll run through functions.
So what's the best way to get started with functions? What's kind of like the hello world of an Azure function?
Yeah, so like I primarily use Visual Studio. So the Visual Studio template, you know, if you have the Azure tools installed for Visual Studio, there's a function template in there, and you can create that, and it kind of gives you a hello world version of it that just like prints a message to the response, and you can run that locally and see a response right away and kind of take it from there, adding different functions to it and all that.
So do they just support C#.NET or can you use other languages?
Yeah, you can use other languages. It supports PowerShell and Node and I think a few others. The one thing though with the latest version of Azure Functions is once you pick a runtime for the function app, all the functions have to be the same runtime. I think in previous versions you can mix and match, but now for performance reasons, I think they limit it. So one function app can only have one runtime.
So you launch up Visual Studio, you've got the function template to work with. And so are you debugging locally or is there a way to debug up in the cloud?
So you can debug locally by executing the function directly in Visual Studio, you know, setting it as a startup project, clicking debug, you put breakpoints in it. Now to call it, you know, like if it's an HTTP function, for example, they give you an endpoint with a localhost URL and you can run that, you know, through Postman or something like that to debug it. You know, up in the cloud, you know, you can print. Actually, there's a logger built in that will direct messages to Application Insights automatically, which is kind of cool for, you know, not just for debugging, but for like gathering telemetry data and stuff like that as well. And it's kind of provided already. Yeah, that's how I've primarily been debugging them.
So when it comes to using functions, right, you mentioned using it for, you know, backend compute and offloading that to the cloud. How realistic is it to basically have your backend be functions? Or do you think it's more of a supplementary thing?
Yeah, so the way that I've used them is mostly as a supplementary thing. You know, I know that they can be used for like a complete backend. You know, I think with that, it's really like a different way to look at it, right? Like instead of a traditional virtual machine with, you know, running IIS and some applications in it, you're really talking about having a bunch of different like nodes, right? That, and you can send it to one node and then that can do some stuff. And then either that could send it to another node directly, or it can store it and then that triggers another node. You know, it's kind of like a Rube Goldberg machine, right? If you're familiar with that, you can have all these different,
yep,
different pieces interacting with each other. So I think like that's a different way to look at it in terms of security and performance and logging, since you don't have a central place anymore, you know, to track a request through all of the nodes, you know, stuff like that. The considerations for that is a little bit different. But I think the one advantage that you could get is with cost, because it's, you could do a consumption model. So you're not necessarily paying for the resources all the time, but when you need them, you know, if it's all user driven events, the user could click a button or something and it does this function for a few seconds and then quits, right? Instead of having a full blown app service or even virtual machine running to serve your back end, where usually you would traditionally think of that, right? If you wanted to store any data or access any data out of a database, like you would always have to have that, right? Whereas with Azure Functions, you don't necessarily need that component anymore.
I believe we've talked about Azure Functions with the previous guest, and he mentioned the hot versus cold starts. Have they improved that in the last year or two? Do you know the performance implications for the ones where it just runs as needed and then kills itself?
Yeah, no, I think that is still a concern. And there are, you know, still recommendations for mitigating factors to that, like running it through an app service that with always on enabled to make sure that it's, you know, at least not completely cold. I think with that, you can even still have some like lukewarm starts, they call it, where it needs to load some dependencies in and so forth, but it wouldn't be the completely cold start. So, you know, that's something to look at depending on the use case, right? Like you can have a app service plan separate from the function that the function uses that could have some of those settings enabled that to help with that. Yeah, it's definitely still a concern.
Yeah. So cost wise, I know like Azure Static Apps are super cheap, if not free, depending on what you're doing. Are functions in that same tier, or can the price get up around service plus levels depending on what you're doing with it?
Yeah, it can. It can get pretty costly and sneakily so, I think. I think, you know, the default plan is a consumption plan. And, you know, if you go into the Azure calculator and look at it and you're like, oh, I could get, you know, 10,000 requests for free or whatever. This is awesome, you know? But I think like the limitations of the consumption plan are you get like a gig and a half of RAM and one CPU or something. It's not very much. And I've found that like when I'm using them, we usually start with that, but like at the end of it, we end up going to something a little bit higher, right? And that would be like using an app service plan outside of the function and then running the function app on that app service plan, just because we need like the always on capability or, you know, just more compute power. The other thing I think like when we get into premium functions, so there's a premium function plan, and I think those start at like 3.5 gigs of RAM. And so you get quite a bit more RAM, but there's also some features of functions that you can only get with a premium plan. Like one that I ran into was VNet support. I think one of the challenges like that a lot of people have is that a lot of people, I think, have a hybrid type environment, right? You have some virtual machines, you have some app services, you have some, you know, managed services, some infrastructure as a service type stuff. And so getting these to fit into that, there's like a lot of little details that the documentation, you know, doesn't cover as well. And I found like VNet integration is only supported by the premium plan. So even if you don't need all that compute power and stuff, if you need to talk to any other Azure resources that are on it, require VNet, and you need to have this function app in the same VNet, then you need to go with a premium plan, which I think starts around like $160 a month. So it's not cheap. And there's certainly cheaper app service plans, but even using a separate app service plan, you don't get that kind of support. So
gotcha. So that brings up security, right? If it doesn't have access to a VNet without premium, does that mean that most functions are inherently insecure?
Yeah, I mean, out of the box, the one consideration is that it is a, you know, public endpoint, right? It's a public URL that you can post to. So there's a couple things with security. The first is you can assign a authentication provider to it. And so that will essentially allow the client to log in, or the user to log in their app. And then, you know, you can configure like Azure AD or even Google or other ones. And then it kind of fronts the function app runtime, like fronts the function call with this authentication provider, similar to like how the authentication handler in IIS would handle it, right? Where it can kind of pass through that first before you can run the function. But that is definitely something that needs to be configured for these, especially if you're using it to manipulate data. The other thing is it does support managed identities. So in terms of like the function app itself reaching out to other Azure resources, you can configure a managed identity to do that. So you don't have to have connection strings and stuff like that.
All right, cool.
Hi, this is Charles Maxwood from Top End Devs. And lately I've been coaching some people on starting some podcasts and in some cases just taking their career to the next level. You know, whether you're beginner going to intermediate going to advanced, whether you're trying to get noticed in the community or go freelance, I've been helping these folks figure out how to get in front of people, how to build relationships, and how to build their careers and max out and just go to the next level. So if you're interested in talking to me and having me help you go to the next level, go to topendevs.com/coaching. I will give you a 1-hour free session where we can figure out what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go, and figure out what the next steps are. And then from there, we can figure out how to get you to the place you want to go. So once again, that's topendevs.com/coaching.
Is there a limit to how long a function can run?
Yes. I know the HTTP ones, I believe their timeout is 230 seconds, and that's a lot lower than other triggers are. I don't remember what the other triggers are off the top of my head, but it's in minutes. But I think that one is lower because something with the way like the internal Azure load balancers and stuff work. I think it was the Microsoft document that I read about it. But I know other ones are longer. But one way to get around that, if you do have some longer running processes, is to use like an orchestrator that can launch different activity functions. And then there's a pattern called the async HTTP pattern. And that essentially you kick it off with an HTTP trigger. And then that kind of starts this orchestration and gives you back like a polling URL. So you can poll it for the status of it, you know, until it's completed or failed or whatever. So that's kind of cool. You can set that up pretty easily with Azure Functions.
So it really is meant to be lightweight, quick running type things, not something that's going to be, you know, very complex and you know, take a while.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, although I think you can use it for you know, some CPU intensive stuff if you wanted to, using activity functions. So at that point, you'd get into like creating an orchestrator, and then that would kick off an activity function. And then you'd do all your CPU intensive stuff in the activity. And then when that returns, you know, the orchestrator would mark it complete. And then it could even, you know, that could kick off another activity function after that if you want to, if you have to, you know, do some more work with the output of that first activity. You know, that kind of orchestration can happen.
So what are some of the ways that you can actually, you know, trigger a function? You know, is it just, you know, you mentioned HTTP. What other ways can you trigger a function?
Yeah. So there's a timer trigger for running scheduled tasks and stuff like that. You can use queue storage or event hubs. You know, if you put something into a queue, that could trigger a function to run. Same thing with event hubs, that can trigger a function to run. I think one sort of pattern that I've seen too is you might have a function that does some work and then it puts it into a queue, and then another trigger is looking at that queue and the next function runs and picks it up in that queue, does something, and then takes the output and puts in another queue, right? And then a function is looking at that queue, so that you could do some fun chaining together with stuff like that.
You mentioned an orchestrator. Is that Kubernetes or is that something else within Azure? I'm just curious.
It's a type of function. So it's actually a type of trigger. It's an orchestrator. And so you can have a timer trigger, for example, kick off an orchestrator function. And then that orchestrator function could kick off several activity functions. it's almost like Azure Logic apps, if you're familiar with those at all. But instead of kind of being a more declarative thing with, you know, drag and drop and that kind of stuff, it's more, it's all set up in C# code or Node.js code or whatever versus a visual designer mode. But you can do a lot of the same things. I think Logic apps have more connectors and stuff like that built in, whereas functions, there's only a dozen different ones. But you can do a lot of the same things through an orchestrator and activities.
So how do functions compare to web jobs or Logic apps?
Yeah, so web jobs is another one that's similar, that is kind of runs background jobs in a web service or an app service. I think the big difference between functions and web jobs is functions support more than C# and .NET. I think we've been talking a lot about C# and .NET here, but they also support PowerShell and Node.js and a few other languages as well. And then for, you know, how they compare to Logic apps, really just that kind of code first versus design first, you know, whereas Logic apps is more design first and this is code first. And I think Logic apps have more built-in actions and connectors and stuff, are more like enterprise integration type scenarios.
So, right, if you're using Azure Functions, right, you've got it in Visual Studio, can you use CI/CD? Do you have integration? Can you run unit tests? How does that stuff work?
Yeah, you can do all of the above. I was actually just working on a unit test for an Azure function earlier today. I mean, it's pretty straightforward to create the dependencies for it in a unit testing framework. And then you can instantiate the function class directly and call the run method of the function directly from a unit test. And then in terms of deploying it, so there in Azure, you can get a default web deploy or publishing profile for it that you can import into Visual Studio if you wanted to go that route, and also use the Azure CLI and create everything with functions there and update config values and stuff like that. And I believe Azure DevOps has built-in tasks for Azure Functions as well. If you are using Azure DevOps, you can integrate it directly in with that. There's lots of options.
Cool.
How do you set up authentication, security with the function? Is it just, is it using a bearer token or?
It uses so within the function app, you set up a provider. So you can use Azure AD or I think you can set up different third-party providers too, like Google and so forth. And then it passes through the user authentication through the function app kind of fronts calling your function with the authentication handler, and then it can pass through. So you can actually get the user security principle and the user context and stuff like that in the function if you wanted to look at roles or anything like that. You can have the identity information available.
That's nice. Yeah. So does Microsoft have pretty good documentation on functions, like the orchestration and the different types and all the triggers and stuff that you've mentioned?
Yeah, they do. The one thing that's a little confusing with the documentation is because it's built on top of an app service, some of it kind of blends together, where it's authentication is a good example of that, where you'll be looking up authentication and it'll be describing authentication for an app service. And it's like, well, wait, is this work for a function too, or just an app service? Or, there's some overlap, right, with functions and app services. But yeah, other than that, they have a lot of good documentation for getting started and all the different triggers and limitations on them and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So what things have we asked about really people should know about?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've certainly touched on all the basics. I would say that they're worth looking into if you're interested in either supplementing current compute services where, you have a workflow or something like that that you don't want taking up app service resources to do, or, it's some event-based thing that maybe users are only going to run it, a few times a day, but, it could consume some CPU or something like that. You can offload them, or if you're starting from scratch and you want to go with a serverless architecture, you know, you can certainly use them for that as well.
Okay, cool. If that's all we got to cover on functions, I think we did cover a lot of things in there in a short amount of time. So I think I will go ahead and move us on to picks then.
Hey folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
All right, cool. Caleb, what's your pick this week?
Mine is a bit unorthodox for me. This one has to do with outside, which I don't do a whole lot of outside, right? But
you just put your kids outside the door and say, "See ya."
Pretty much, you know, like, hey, buddy, if you want to go outside, go run around the back. I can see you outside the sliding glass doors. If something happens, holler. No. So we're kind of doing glamping, right? And because my wife likes outside and my son wants to try camping and stuff. So my wife actually bought this 10-person fully dark pop-up tent, right? So, you know, you can close it to where even during the day it's completely dark. And we've actually taken it over to her parents' house because they got a big, you know, yard. They got a couple of acres, and set it up there and put in blow-up mattresses and got fans and the whole deal. And, you know, so everybody's happy, right? Get a little bit of everything. And the thing is really nice. It's really easy to set up and to break down. So my pick is the Ozark Trail 10-person dark rest instant cabin tent. There you go.
They always seem to overrate the number of people you can actually fit in a tent. You know, 10 people might.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good size tent. No. You're not going to sleep 10 people in there.
No,
10
you're
kids,
not.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good pick. We're actually in the market for a tent. We aren't sure, like, you know, there's four of us. So it's like, well, should we go with a 6-person? Is that still too small? You know, so maybe we'll look at a 10-person.
Yeah, it wasn't that expensive. I think it was 100-something in the hundreds. So it wasn't too bad. Yeah.
All right, Carl, what's your pick for us?
Oh, yeah. My pick is the Ninja Foodie Air Fryer. So it's actually, we got this in January and it's actually replaced our toaster and our microwave. So wow. It could do air frying and broiling and roasting and even toaster function. But yeah, it's great. It's smaller than both of those. And so we got a lot of counter space back and we use it all the time.
Nice. My pick this week, it took me a while to really figure out what I wanted to pick, but my wife and I have been watching a new Netflix show. She likes a lot of food shows and Food Network and things like that. So we stumbled upon this Netflix show called Is It Cake? And it's these, you know, cake people that make cakes, but they look like ordinary objects. And so make things like a statue or a bowling pin or the final was... Somebody made a sewing machine out of cake and what looked like a suit of bag of luggage with clothes sticking out and all that kind of stuff. And they were so realistic. And the host of it is Mikey Day. He's from SNL. So he's a pretty good host and brings some humor along with it and things like that. But it was really interesting. Some of the things that they make out of cake and look so dang real, because at the end they have these judges come in. And they show them like five different things. Four of them are real and one of them is cake. And they have to pick which one is cake. And quite often they get the wrong one.
You know what it makes me think of? Have you guys seen those YouTube videos where they have the realistic cat and dog cakes? Like they look like real animals and they put them in front of their cat or dog and they cut into them and look at the reaction of the other animal. And, right. And they're like, what are you doing? So anyway, cool. I have to check it out.
Yep. So that's my pick.
Is It Cake? Okay.
Yep.
It is. I like cake.
Yep. All right, Carl, if our listeners have questions and they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter at Carl Layton. And then my website is www.carlserver.com. And there I have links to Twitter as well as GitHub and everywhere else. So
good.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming back on the show, Carl.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. If our listeners want to reach out and get in touch with us, we'd love to hear your feedback. Let us know what you'd like to have us cover. They can get me. I am on Twitter. I am at .NET Superhero.
Dun, 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 dun. And I'm at Caleb Wells Codes. Yep. All right. Then next Monday.
All right. Everybody have a good weekend, and we'll catch everybody else in the next episode of Adventures in .NET.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.